Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks. This is Ramble Ralph Pittsburgh.
Tornado.
Hey, how's it going there?
Hello?
Hey. How's it going there?
Hello?
Tornado, can you hear me?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me? Hello? Looks like we dropped Tony from the call there. We got a little bit of overcast skies here, having some difficulty with the transmission. Hello. Can anyone hear me? We're getting Tony back. Smooth sailing from here on out for Lucky.
Tornado.
Hey, we're live. How's it going? A little late.
Are you ready for my NFL draft report?
Sure.
Oh, okay. We're talking fights tonight? I thought we were talking draft.
Oh, I don't know. Is the draft going on?
I'll talk anything. I'm like a human beatbox.
Just not hockey. I don't want to talk about hockey after last night.
Why not?
Fuck it.
I want to talk about hockey.
I was just watching the Penguins. Not the Pittsburgh variety, though. The real
animal. It was great. That Flyers Penguin series is a bloody mess. You know, guys beating the shit out of each other. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And the right team won.
Well, anyway, we have enough enough glory from last year from the Stanley Cup to last us a while.
Yeah, I know. I mean, shit, the Flyers haven't won the Stanley Cup. I wasn't even alive yet.
Anyway, we got a couple MMA guys on tonight. Get you their names in a second here. We're having massive technical difficulties the last few days here with the rainy, overcast weather we've been having. Skype's been going in and out. Not fun. But anyway, hopefully we can tough it out here, get the show done.
Hey, let me ask you a question. I just signed up for a Skype, so I don't have a webcam yet. I don't have a microphone yet. But would that end up helping, my participation in the show?
It possibly would, yeah, because... it's a free call, number one. It's already a free call for me, but...
I just got a Skype probably about 2 weeks ago. I was on Facebook the one night, and I was literally in the middle of placing the status update about the Flyers, and I see an incoming call. An incoming call? What the hell is that? It was from an old LHU teammate of mine. He talked in the 98 Nationals at 125, he was the runner-up. And he's in Korea now. He's living over in Korea. He actually, when he was at Lock Haven, was ROTC. And he graduated and he went into the Army. And then he's been over for Korea the last few years. And that still talks to his parents from time to time. So we became Facebook friends. I tugged him in some photos. And, we'd send each other, messages and shit. So he's like, oh, I got this Skype thing. And he's trying to talk to me. I'm like, I don't have a webcam. And then I signed up for Skype, but I don't have a webcam or a microphone. So he's talking to me, and I can see him clear as day, which is amazing because he's over in Korea, half the world away. And I'm there typing my responses.
it's a wonderful thing, technology.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Skype is great because... so freaking cheap, and a few years ago I actually got a Skype phone, a cell phone, but it was from the UK, so I couldn't figure out how to transfer it to the United States use, but it was a specifically made Skype phone, and I think they've avoided doing that here because they know so many people would choose that option over cell phones. If you could just take Skype and use it on a cell phone, it would be so much cheaper than what they have now. There would be no text fees that you have to worry about that much. So inexpensive. I mean, I've had a $12 credit on there for all the extra charges that could possibly come in, and I've had it on there for 3 months, and it's only $5 left, but still, it's you'd never get away with that on a cell phone contract. But anyway, getting back to the mixed martial arts scene, I did want to talk about a suspension that happened this week. Alistair Overeem. There's a couple of developments in that case. Number one, I've been reading a lot about this. I think I'm actually going to do a big article for BleacherReport.com. I made my debut back on that site, and I got 12,000 plus hits on my stories. Two stories I did in a week's time. It's kind of surprising because my big article on the Fertitas only has 10,000 hits. And I wrote that in 2007. So, well, anyway, the attention I got, they're going to hire me full-time to be a featured columnist. Not hire me, but acquire me, I guess, because it's more like a free contributor site. Anyway, get to the point on Overeem. He was suspended from fighting in Nevada, at least. He won't get a license for 9 months. And it's about the length of a female pregnancy. He's going to have to sit on the sidelines and wait to see what happens with the heavyweight division while he's out. Dana White's been really kind of tight-lipped about the whole situation. He doesn't want to talk about it. He got really pissed when Nate Marquardt was doing... TRT and ended up testing too high a week before a fight and threw him out of the UFC. Anyway, the situation is a little different. They went out of their way to acquire Strikeforce. They wanted the Strikeforce heavyweights. They're folding all those guys into the UFC this year after the heavyweight Grand Prix is over. So it's a big deal. You know, this guy is a number one contender. He's one of the best heavyweights in the world. And a lot of people speculated, well, there's no way this guy went from the size he was to the size he is now without help. So he's like the Barry Bonds of MMA right now. Everybody's talking about him. And the thing is, like, baseball scandal on steroids came out, like, years after the fact. And in the media age and in the internet age here, we're dealing with something that's happening right now. We're hearing about it right now. So it's kind of interesting. You know, boxing, I don't think has really had a period like this where so many guys were getting bagged for one thing. And it's testosterone here. So I think you have to look really hard at a drug testing program. There's been a guy, actually the guy that created Belco and the cream stuff for Barry Bonds, recommended some steps to take where the UFC could kind of head it off at the pass. But I don't know. I don't know what really the solution could be. But anyway, there's a company called VADA, I think the initials are, the Voluntary Anti-Doping Agency or something. And I think the UFC should just basically provide bonuses to fighters like they do for their Twitter followers and all that shit. And basically say, hey, you know, you get a $5,000 bonus if you abide by the Voluntary Anti-Doping Association and get yourself tested. It'd be nice and easy, you know. I'm sure the VADA would love to have the publicity, and the UFC would be able to keep their image clean. But Dana White's been really not wanting to talk about it because it's that much of an issue, and everybody wants to talk about it. But I guess he had an interview this morning where he talked about it with Jim Rome because they had just broken the news that Overeem would be suspended. But anyway, we also had a big UFC event, of course, over the weekend, Saturday. John Jones versus Rashad Evans, the big main event. And we'll talk a little bit about that later. I also got to sit in on the conference call with Floyd Mayweather Jr. And interesting, because I only got to be on there for about 17 minutes before my Skype shit the bed. But Floyd had an open workout too yesterday in, no, it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before, I think, in Las Vegas, which I could not attend, unfortunately, this time. But I did watch a little bit of it on Ustream, and 50 Cent was hamming it up for the cameras, and man, I wish I had been at this one because, you know, he actually went around to the media at one point and he was like asking, who are you, where are you from? It was kind of funny. The first group of people he started asking, everybody was like, we're with Robin Leach. Robin Leach? Like, what? How is Robin Leach up in your gym? What is going on? And he asked a few guys from a couple websites and got them on Ustream, so that was kind of cool. But Floyd was just looking as good as ever, just talking a lot of, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And just not really willing to badmouth Miguel Cotto at all, so it's kind of interesting. No sign of his father, though. One question I wanted to ask that I couldn't because I got cut off from the freaking call was, you know, what did you say to your father? What did your father say to you before that Mosley fight? I've been wanting to ask that forever, but I figured why bother trying to call back in after the second disconnect? Because there's no way. It was like half hour into the call. There's no way he was going to get to my question. So anyway, I got about a 17-minute clip here. We're going to play that for everybody, and then we're going to be talking to our first guest, who is Jeff Hatton at 9:15. So between the end of this and 9:15 or so, we'll chat some other news. We got the Bernard Hopkins, Andre Dawson, Chad Dawson, Andre. I keep calling him Andre because of the the Expos guy that played for the Red Sox. Chad Dawson, Bernard Hopkins fight. Got to talk about that a little bit, but let me get this Floyd Mayweather clip up, and we'll play a little portion of that. It was kind of interesting. You know, he says Miguel Cotto is basically not somebody he wants to overlook, but he feels like he's getting better with age. And I don't know, he said he seems like he's a little bit more laid back for this fight. Anyway, let's hear from the man himself. On second hand. Computer.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm blessed, doing well.
You just talked about the fact that you say the things that you go through just make you stronger, and you know, a lot of some of the things that have happened recently in public, you kind of have done the opposite. You've opened yourself up. There's a live stream of your workout. You go on an interview with Bison and you ask a lot of questions. What prompted you to make that decision to just open yourself up to let everybody see your workouts in full? And then what do you think that has had?
I think it's going to help with certain pay-per-view buys. It's about, you know, having a sharp mind and having a strong business team around you. I think it's a great thing, even with the Bison. I think it was marvelous because the people had a chance to see how articulate, you know, I am. You know, I'm not just, you know, a young, flashy, tight-head man that's making a lot of money. You know, what it's also done is I'm making smart business decisions. You know, I understand what I'm on 24/7, and it's about the viewers. It's about you must watch TV. You know, and when I'm on TV, I want to keep people glued to the television because that's what it's about. Even people that's non-boxing fans are going to say, you know what, we got to tune in and watch this guy. He's very, very interesting. He has a great story. So, you know, I don't mind telling my story to the world. And, you know, I think to sit down with Dyson was great. I think that I want to continue. Like I said before, most important thing is entertain people. You have been interviewing me for years, and you know me as a person. And, you know, I don't ever go out there on the lane and talk about how many things I have done for the people that's less fortunate for us, me and my team, what we have done. But, you know, that's not important. I do it for myself. You know, I do it because I feel it's right, you know, to give back to certain public schools, to give back to children that's less fortunate, you know, Habitat for Humanity, you know, 3 square meals, very, very important. But, you know, on 24/7, we don't always talk about those things, or on TV, we don't always talk about those things because a lot of times the feedback that we get is that that's not entertaining, that's boring. We want to see the Floyd Mayweather with the flashy money. We want to see Floyd Mayweather with the diamond necklace. We want to see Floyd Mayweather with the nice cars. Then the response we get from him is, they love it, we get more viewers, but then on the flip side, they say, all the guy do is show off. So it's a catch-22. It's like, damn if I do, damn if I don't.
Well, when you watch your workout, if you're here, can you see literally that you're able to go several minutes on the net, and yet you're still talking and you're not breathing hard? You're really comfortable with your work up at the level you're doing it. If you're your opponent and you're watching that, how do you seeing somebody in that kind of shape at 35 years old?
I think that I'm getting better with age, actually. I think I'm still sharp. You know, I'm still hungry. But to answer that question as far as my opponent, I think if it was my
Robert Topenthal, he at one point said, you know, that he implied that it gets old and he's kind of not, he's kind of tired of it. He'd rather just go, you know, he kind of implied that.
Does he imply what?
That, you know, what he's doing, you know, getting on the conference calls and having a dinner over there.
We find out. I'm on the hold.
Do you, did that ever get old to you? I mean, do you?
I think by now Hopkins is, you know, I think right up to him, I think he's a hell of a champion. But, you know, when we get to talking about record-breaking numbers and different things, this total, on this level, it's totally different. But I think Bernard Hopkins is, I mean, of course, he's a, to be his age, not just to be the age, he has accomplished a lot in the sport, and, you know, I commend him for that. But, you know, I think, you know, with my career, it's totally different. You know, Floyd Mayweather can go anywhere, you know, on this earth and do record-breaking numbers. I think that's a good thing. It's a great thing.
My last question is, though, do you ever get tired of doing these interviews? You have to answer questions about, you know, what you said about Jeremy Lin or, you know.
Sometimes I get it, yeah, of course, you know, but this is what I chose. This is what I chose to do. I mean, it can make or break you. And it has, you know, bad stories about me, but it has well, great stories about me. But this is what I chose. And my life, then, this comes with, you know, sometimes you may be like, damn, the fan may come to you and may want to take a picture, but that day you're just not that, you know, you're not feeling it, you're not feeling right. Something can be going, not be right in your household. But, you know, sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. You don't. You know, when I walk away from a fan, sometimes that I don't take a picture for, or I don't sign an autograph for, buys me. I'm like, damn, this is just, and I probably had bought in pay-per-view each time I went out. I couldn't take a picture, but, you know,
okay, folks, we got cut off yet again. We got some bad overcast weather here up in the Hampshire. It's a show, but we're going to roll on. We're going to have a couple minutes. Hey, we're back.
Well, the player I wanted to meet was getting went to the Panthers.
Well, I don't know how much we got in there. I don't know where it exactly cut off, but I think that's, we're going to process that a little later and post it on the blog at fightnewsunlimited.com rather than try to finish that clip. But, of course, we got UFC 145 to talk about. I just want to run through that real quick. One of my articles was about fights to make after UFC 145. So that discussion has already been started over at bleacherreport.com. My article, I've been posting it on Facebook. If you go to my Facebook profile, you'll find it. But anyway, John Jones won. Well, we had another episode there. Sorry, folks. I don't even know where we left off. But we do have guests on that we're supposed to have tonight. Hopefully we get smooth sailing through the rest of the show. We'll get this done. I do want to mention, while I know we have a clear signal, that we're working to promote the new company, millifidel.com, MILIFIDEL.com. A strong military company there with some interesting clothing. Some support our troop stuff there, and they even have a line of clothing for females and babies, male and female baby line too, called Mini Fidel. So check out that website and their gear and their clothing. They're looking to get involved more in the combat sports industry. And we're trying to get them a little bit of publicity. We're going to see a lot more of their banners and stuff on our website over the next few days and weeks. And check them out, MILIFIDEL.com. We're going to connect with Jeff Hatton here. Hopefully we can get him on without dropping the call again with Blog Talk Radio. I don't know where we dropped off with that.
I'm sorry, but the person you called has a voicemail box that has not been set up yet.
Uh-oh.
Goodbye.
Well, Jeff Hatton is not answering. We got a ring.
Hello?
Hello, Jeff.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Going good.
We also have Tony the Tornado Pinnacle on the line. I don't know if he's listening. He's off with the...
I'm listening. I'm right here. What's up?
He's back.
Hey, what's up, man?
He's on the clock.
I had to take a break for a minute. I'm a big fan of the Eagles, man, and they traded up in the draft. I had to see what was going on.
Awesome.
Well, we're coming up on a big fight for you this weekend. Tell us a little bit about your involvement here in the Cage Sports Series, and what do you know about your opponent?
This will be my second fight for Cage Sport, as it's been all professional. I fought my second amateur fight there quite a few years back. But April 28th, this Saturday, I'm fighting a guy named Brandon Himpleman from Boise, Idaho, for the Cage Sport bantamweight title. And watch a little bit of old video on him, and know a little bit about him, and know he's tough and excited for the fight.
All right. Was that a late change? I think I read somebody else here supposed to be fighting in the press release.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a couple times now. I'm supposed to fight the guy I was supposed to. And he backed out.
All right. So this is a five-round, five-minute fight still, though?
Yes, sir.
So what's that like preparing for a fight like that that's, could go longer than a normal three-minute affair?
Even in a regular fight, it's not 3 minutes, it's three fives as a professional. Training for a five-minute round, you just got to pick up the intensity and maybe lengthen the practice a little longer. But I always train hard and always prepare for what could happen, so I'll be ready.
All right. And how did you first get into fighting in the first place?
I've been a fan of UFC and mixed martial arts since before I was a teenager, back in the early 90s, watching the old UFC 1, 2, and 3. And always been a fan of the sport, always been the fighter type, and started wrestling. And my first year wrestling, a guy in there was studying jiu-jitsu, and he showed us some moves, and I was just always intrigued by it, and when I went into the Navy, I started training a little bit more jiu-jitsu, and then when I got out of the Navy, I put it all together and started fighting.
Cool. And do you have anybody out there that you watch a lot of, who you try to kind of absorb stuff from, any favorite fighters or anything like that?
My favorite fighter is probably Jose Aldo, just because of intensity. Other than that, I look at all fighters I look at and watch to maybe learn something from, not one fighter in particular. I have my own style. I'm not trying to emulate anybody's style or anything along them lines, but if I see something that could work in my repertoire of moves, then definitely I'd absorb that
right. And what's the scene like out there in Washington for mixed martial arts?
Washington State, we do pretty good as far as amateur and professional fights. There's fights whether they're amateur or professional, pretty much every single weekend here up in Washington. And we got tough guys that come out of Washington. World champion, 155-pound Ben Henderson. He wrestled in high school wrestling here in Washington. He's a few years older than me. And in the past, the Pacific Northwest and all, you know, we have a lot of tough guys.
And is there anybody out there specifically want to fight next after this, or in your career in the future?
Any particular fighter? The only particular fighter I would say I'd want to fight is world champion Dominic Cruz, and that's because we wrestled against each other in Pocatello, Idaho. In freestyle back when we were 15 or 16, and he beat me by a point or two, and he ended up taking third in that. It was a freestyle national for younger kids or teenagers, and he ended up taking third and ended up taking fifth, and I'd just like to get that fight in there.
Get another crack at him with punches and elbows allowed.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So, what do you think about seeing him on the big stage now with the Ultimate Fighter and all that, and the WEC folded over into the UFC?
He's not the only guy who I've been involved with throughout wrestling or personal experiences that I've gone through that I know that I've wrestled or competed with that are on a big stage. For them, I'm proud they got up there. That's just motivation for me, and more mental toughness. Because I've already competed with some guys. I know where they're at, and they're world class level, and I think I'm a world class fighter. And so yeah, just motivates me.
Now, do you have a favorite submission move that you like to go for, or favorite strike? Anything like that?
Not necessarily a favorite. I like all submissions, like all punches. My favorite one is the one that connects real good, or the submission that sinks in real deep. I don't necessarily go looking for.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit there.
Oh, I'm right here.
All right, we're back now. Solid connection. So you were talking about submissions. That's where we
were. Yeah, I was just saying that I don't particularly have a favorite submission or a favorite punch. My favorite submission or favorite punch is the one that I can use at that point in time. If an uppercut is the punch at that time I can use, and that's my favorite move. And if an armbar is my showing itself that I could use it, then that's my favorite move at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relate. I don't do MMA at all. I come from a boxing background, but I can tell you that from watching so much MMA, when somebody comes at me drunk at a party and tries to wrestle, I always go for the rear naked choke. Somebody knows it's coming. It's hard to sink, I noticed. But if you know what you're doing and you're persistent enough, you can sink that thing on anybody.
Yeah, majority of my wins as an amateur and as a professional have all come by rear naked choke.
Awesome. So what's your ultimate goal in the sport?
Be world champion.
Yeah. So you want to get to the UFC, apparently.
Yeah, I want to get to the UFC and go beyond. I'm going to go to the top.
And what do you think about their growth since day one? You said you watched the first three. What's it been like as a fighter to watch that?
Well, they've obviously put a lot of rules on the sport and, you know, changed it to make it more accepting to a lot of Americans that didn't approve of the earlier ones with no weight classes and you know, groin strikes, hair pulling, and all that stuff. It was pretty intense back in them days, and they turned it into a, you know, for me as a fighter, I call it a sport, you know. Some people still see it as being pretty barbaric or whatnot, but it's just like a sport like any other sport, and they put some ground rules in there, and it's blown up. And you know, I couldn't be happier, you know, because it's my favorite sport.
Right. Now, have you noticed, because of the popularity of the sport in general, that the fighter pay has gone up in the local area and the regional shows and stuff?
About pay, I you know, I still think mixed martial artists are getting underpaid, just based on boxing point of view. You know, you say you're a boxer, boxers get paid a lot more than mixed martial arts fighters, being the main event on TV, pay-per-view, you know. Them guys get several million dollars, as to our mixed martial art world champion, UFC champion. They're not getting nearly that amount.
Right. Yeah, I think the last guy I saw that really made a lot of money for a single fight was Brock Lesnar. I haven't really been keeping up on the exact fight pay per show since I saw him.
And I'm sure that wasn't even half of what, you know, like when Ricky Hatton and Manny Pacquiao fought, each boxer, win or lose, both came out of that fight with $7 million.
Yeah.
You know? And that's,
yeah, and now you know what Floyd's making next weekend to fight Cotto. I'm sure that's going to be around the $10 million range, if not more. I remember when Mike Tyson, I'm talking about back in the 1990s, when he had come out of prison and he was fighting like Holyfield, and even before he was set to fight Holyfield, and he was fighting like Frank Bruno and Bruce Seldon, some total fights that lasted less than four rounds, and I think he got a hit maybe six times in both those fights combined. And I think he pocketed about maybe a good $15 million for each one of those fights.
Yeah. So if MMA can get evened out, you know, even in that ballpark, I think the fighters would appreciate that.
Yeah, I think they make enough to do it. It's kind of like the floodgates open. The sooner they pay the first fighter $1 million for a fight, then it's going to get out of control. And I think they're worried about the way that could happen so quickly. Like, I guess the big model of how not to run a company, you know, you could point to Affliction, their MMA company that didn't last very long. And one of their biggest downfalls was they paid the guys too much. And even Donald Trump was invested in that one. But the UFC definitely could use a few fighters that make $1 million per fight. It's bottom line, what they deserve. But they turn around and say, well, just fighting, you get so much perks and sponsorships and everything like that that it's worth the low pay. You get health insurance. So that's the trade-off for you. But it's interesting. It's one of those debates that we've been talking about since 2007 or so. We had a big MMA versus boxing debate. That was the one bone of contention, the pay. You know, that MMA could still learn from boxing is how to get fighters better to pay. But there's different money people in boxing than there is in MMA. You get basically the Abu Dhabi government, the Fertittas, and Dana White controlling the pay of the UFC.
Right.
Whereas in boxing, you have hundreds of different money men for these different shows, and it's not really one particular league or another. It's everybody in the game going against each other. So it's kind of like the UFC is on top, so they set the pace. They don't have to worry about any competition there to pay guys higher money. But it is
Roger.
Get back to you. What's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
The most important thing is, I believe fighting is, we're all young men, some younger, some older, in good physical shape. We all come from our own backgrounds, and we all claim to be perfectionists somewhat in our styles of fighting. And so it just comes down to the mental readiness, I'm physically ready and for anything. So it's just mentally preparing yourself and working on the weight cut and getting ready for that fight.
And how much weight do you typically cut for a fight? Obviously it varies, but what's like your...
It varies. I usually can fluctuate between 15 to 25 pounds.
Right. Wow. That's rough. I used to wrestle in high school, and I was kind of glad, even though it was tough senior year, bumping up in weight, but I weighed about 155, and I had to wrestle 171 for the whole season senior year.
Yeah.
I used to bitch about cutting weight, and then I had to do that. And then actually one fight I had to drink a gallon of water to make weight for 189. That was rough, but
Rich and I always bust each other's balls because we almost fought in the college amateur ranks, but I'm still the only guy in college boxing history, and I confirmed this about a month ago, to ever actually compete in five different weight classes and actually be in all five of them in a span of less than 3 months. And I started in the middle, went up, went down, then went back up. But I was, like I said, in one fight, I was putting rocks in my pocket and drinking water. And a couple weeks later, I'm standing on the scale, buck naked, thinking about shaving my head to get that extra tenth of a pound off, and spitting mist into a cup.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Whenever I think about MMA weight cuts, I think about the guy, Gabe Rudiger, on the Ultimate Fighter. He was like 1 pound away.
Yeah, that guy. Are you talking about that guy who did the colonic?
I don't know.
Or whatever? No.
Well, I don't know if it was him. But he's in the sauna for like the last few hours, trying to lose that weight, and he just gives up with like a pound to go. And I'm just thinking, I lost a pound and a half in 15 minutes once wrestling. You can do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, weight cutting is it's a mental, too, if you haven't done it and you're cutting weight for the first time, it's pretty overwhelming for a young man. But when you've been doing it over half your life, it gets pretty, pretty much average day. I fought, and this will be my sixth fight since August, and our sixth or seventh fight since August, and so it's like 1 month I get to eat, next month I'm cutting weight. But it's a lot different than high school wrestling. High school wrestling, you're cutting weight for your pride and for your school and to be the best wrestler, and now you're doing the same thing for MMA, except for they pay you as a professional just to make weight.
Yes, it adds a little bit more importance to it when they penalize you for not making weight.
Yes.
But what would you say you love most about mixed martial arts?
I'm just a real competitive person, I compete at everything I do, and I strive to be the best at whatever I do. And mixed martial arts is my favorite sport, of course, and I'm in it. And I just want to keep going and be the best that I can be.
Awesome. And is there anybody out there you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to?
I'd just like to say hi to all my friends and family that are coming up to the fight this weekend. And glad to see you out there. And I'd like to thank Big Fight Management. And I'd like to thank Jacknet Apparel and Matt Yano for hooking us up. And thank you for having me here.
Yeah, Matt's a good guy. We've been talking to Matt since we were a MySpace page.
funniest thing I've ever think I've seen Matt do. I first time I met him, we had talked a couple times on MySpace, and I bumped into him at a fight card down in Philadelphia, and I'm going back to, I don't even think I was co-hosting the show yet, which I started doing in 2008. I think it must have been 2007. I was sitting ringside covering the fight card, and like when I go to a fight card, even if I'm covering it for the website, I'll pay for my own ticket, and I only ask that I bring my camera in because I'm a fight fan, too. I'm a boxing fan. I love the sport, and I have a lot of friends in the Philadelphia circuit that are fighting that I trained with, and I want to be a fan. I want to yell. I want to scream. I want to get into it, and I don't feel like I'm working. So I'm sitting there with the bag. We're in the third row, and Matt had come over to talk to me, and me and him were bullshitting or whatever, and it was the first fight of the night. And this one young kid from Virginia, I think it was fighting, and he was looking pretty good. He looked, like, real smooth, and, like, he was moving a good head movement. And I'm like, damn, so a kid that's making his pro debut, he's got some skills. And he was fighting a kid from Philly also making his pro debut. And you could tell they were both pro debuts, and you could tell the kid from Virginia was a seasoned boxer. He hit this kid from Philly with a three-punch combination. The kid was out cold on the first punch, and he hit him two more times on his way down. Matt jumps up and starts going to the ring. I said, where the hell are you going? He goes, shit, I'm going to size this kid. What do you think I'm doing?
That's a good one there.
Yeah. He's one of the first guys, too, to decide not just to do PR for boxers, but to... You know, since crossover into MMA, and there's probably about two or three guys that are on my mailing list that send me stuff for the blog like that, and he's one of them. He's a kid still. He's younger than all of us. And in your 20s still. It's must be nice. But I think he was like 18 when we first started talking to him. And he wrote a lot of stuff for our website, too. We first got the .com. Big shout-out to Matt. Anyway, any final thoughts or predictions on the next fight there?
I'd just like to see it get down quick. First round, you know, first round TKO or submission. Always nice, you know, to get down here.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, and... We definitely will keep an eye on you, and wish you the best, and maybe someday we'll see you on the big stage in the cage of the UFC, fighting for the world title.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Thanks again.
All right, you have a good night. Thanks a lot.
You too.
And next we have Julian Rosa coming up from the same card. Another one of Matt Yano's guys there. So we're just going to connect him. Get him on the line. But, Tony, I was trying to get your ear on the Bernard Hopkins-Chad Dawson fight while we're between connections here. Why don't you give us your... since it's coming up this weekend.
Well, we had a chance to talk to Dawson's simulation guy, named John Kelly, and... what I had said to Iceman was the May last fought in October, and I read two reports. Both of them were described. One said that Dawson was, and I'm quote, dominated, and Hopkins was old. The other one said that Hopkins was setting traps, and he was pretty much getting, he was setting the traps that he thinks Dawson was going to fall into. So now you had two respected boxing scribes on polar opposite sides. Was Hopkins frustrated? From watching it again, I think he was. Is he growing old overnight? Very possible. The thing about Dawson is Dawson willing to step on the gas pedal? That's the question. That's what hurt him in his loss. What the hell's the boy's name from quarterback that Hopkins ended up being John. So now I'm drawing a brain fart. Yeah, of course, you know. But that's what hurt him there. And then Dawson also. So if Dawson's best opportunity to win this fight is going to be use his long jab. He's a southpaw. Use his long jab and pretty much fight similar to the way Joe Calzaghe did against Bernard Hopkins. Joe just used they were not hard punches, but they were high volume, and it won it in the judges' eyes. I know some people thought that Calzaghe didn't beat Hopkins, but he got the decision because, especially over the second half of the fight, he outworked him. Hopkins is not a guy that's going to outwork you anymore. Hopkins is a guy that's going to beat you by forcing you to fight his game, which is very methodical. He likes to use a lot of angles. So if Hopkins is able to find a home for his lead right hand, then, you're going to be dealing with a situation where he's going to be able to hit and clinch, and mug Dawson. And I like both fighters for different reasons. I followed Hopkins his whole career. I followed Dawson, since he became pro, and, of course, being trained by John Scully, I highly respect. If you put me out on a limb to give a prediction, I am going to go with Chad Dawson in this fight by decision. Some people are asking if you can give this guy to stop Bernard. I don't think so. The only way he is able to stop Bernard Hopkins is if Hopkins is severely old overnight and he wears him down to the point where Hopkins retires after, like, say, 9 or 10 rounds. Not really beaten up, but more worn out. I'm going to go with Dawson by a very close decision.
Hey, we're back. So, Tony was saying about the close decision.
I don't have a lot of time, but I'm picking Dawson by a close decision here. I think the only way there would be potentially stoppage would be something if Hopkins really gets old fast and ends up retiring on the stool after maybe 9 or 10 rounds. But I don't see him really getting beat up. I see the fight not being really exciting. Dawson sometimes has a tendency to be more of a safety first fighter. Hopkins more is a very methodical fighter these days. Always looking for openings. I think he'll be throwing a lot of single punches and trying to clinch. I think he's going to try to frustrate Dawson and make a mistake. I just see Dawson having a superior work rate in this fight and being a very close decision, something along the lines of maybe like 115, 113, which would be like 7 rounds to 5, maybe something along the lines of like 7-4-1. Making just once again being a close fight, and we'll see. Also, a very promising fight on the undercard, Seth Mitchell, who's a very exciting up and coming heavyweight. He's a guy that is American bred, and he's a guy that I think he's a 28-0-1 with 18 knockouts, and he's really becoming force to be reckoned with. He is fighting another Philadelphian by the name of Chaz Witherspoon. I know Chaz. He's a second cousin of our terrible Tim Witherspoon. I know the whole Witherspoon family. Chaz, he's got a good right hand. Sometimes he can get a little bit lazy in there. He had that loss to Chris Areola and also a stoppage loss to Tony Thompson. He's getting another crack at Vladimir this summer. Chaz is a nice step up for Seth Mitchell. He has absolutely a puncher's chance, but I think the favorite in this fight has to be Mitchell. He's the guy that is being touted. He is the guy that they're moving forward where, Chaz has been stopped a few times and he's trying to rebuild his career.
All right. Well, that's going to have to be it for the boxing. We've got to get our last guest on before the show ends. Julian Arosa here, waiting in the wings. So, thanks for that, buddy. As always, very professional and accurate.
Hello?
Julian.
How's it going?
Hey, this is Ramble Rouse and Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited. We also
have, how's it going, man?
Good. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the line.
Jeez.
He's our boxing guru.
All right.
Do you have any boxing stories you want to share? But first of all, tell us a little bit about your opponent coming up this weekend and the sport fight company working for them. What's that like?
Yeah, I'm fighting Ryan the Mongoose Mulvihill. This is the second time I'm going to be fighting him. I beat him the first time, so I'm pretty much just going to do kind of the same game plan on beating him. So just going to go out there and just defend his shot and punch him in the face a lot. So.
Nice.
That's
funny because, you know, actually I went to an event that John Jones participated in years ago at Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut one time. And
yeah.
I had got a little drink on, and I kept yelling from the press row area, "Hit him in the face!"
Yeah, that's usually the desired spot to hit somebody, so hopefully that's what I'm going to be doing.
Yeah, that's always good advice. So, do you have any favorite submission moves or striking style or anything like that?
Yeah, I just like to, you know, I just like to kind of brawl, really, is what it is, and just use my length and my arms to just kind of keep the distance. And I'm more of a stand-up fighter, but for some reason they say I'm a submission expert because I've won most of my fights off submissions, but it's basically because the other opponent didn't want to strike with me, and it just ended up getting to the ground, and I just used my jiu-jitsu to take him out that way. So wherever the fight goes, I'm comfortable in getting a W for it. So we'll see what happens tomorrow. I'm banking on him trying to shoot on me until he can't, gases out. So
cool.
That's what we're gonna be doing.
And what's it been like working with Sport Fight?
Oh, it's good. I love fighting over there. It's a good venue, and you know, I'm really comfortable fighting over there. My coach is a matchmaker, so you know, I'm just super comfortable with it. It's usually the place I fight at, so. It is more comfortable than anything. So I like to fight over there really as much as I can.
Cool. And how did you first get involved in fighting?
I had gotten into some trouble. I got in a couple street fights. Almost got in some trouble, and I just decided that I'd always drive by the MMA school that we got in Yakima and just decided to try it out, and after the first few days, I loved it, so I just kept with it.
Sweet.
Yeah, I just kept driving by Yakima MMA, Rich Garrett. So, and I talked to him, and he convinced me that fighting was wasn't as dangerous as it looked. So,
has that proved to be true for you so far?
Yeah, so far I'm 17-0 as a fighter, 10-0 as an amateur, so I haven't got hurt really. So I get hurt more in training than I've ever got hurt in the cage, so it's worked out pretty good for me so far.
All right. And is there anybody out there you really want to fight, either next or in your career?
Oh, man. I don't even know. Just whoever wants to fight me, I'll fight whoever. It doesn't even bother me. I don't care how the odds are. I just want to fight the best and just get my name out there. And just whoever is lined up to fight me after I get the title, just I'll fight whoever, really.
Cool.
I'm comfortable in my ability to, you know, take on whoever.
All right. And what do you enjoy most about fighting in mixed martial arts?
I love sparring. It's probably my favorite thing to do. Just going to the gym every day and just training is probably the funnest part about it. I really enjoy fighting too, but the most time I get is with my sparring and the training I do. So that's my favorite part about it all. Weight cutting is not my favorite part.
Yeah, we talked to your buddy, your previous guest there, about that, Jeff Hatton. It's just talking about how rough that is. He said he cuts up to 25 pounds before a fight, so.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, I'm not cutting as much as that, but just weight cutting altogether, just, you know, it's a little irritating sometimes, but it's part of the sport, and you gotta do what you gotta do.
The MMA weight classes are so far apart, too. It's kind of incredible.
Yeah.
Especially since most people come from a wrestling background where there's like 12 different weight classes and 13 at Big Mouth.
Yeah, for sure.
But do you have favorite fighters out there, fighters you watch a lot of, try to pick up moves from?
Yeah, Rich Garen's probably my favorite fighter, but besides him, I like Dominic Cruz a lot. I like his style and the way he fights it. So those are probably my two favorite fighters.
Cool. And what do you think about Cruz and Faber on The Ultimate Fighter there? You been watching that?
I have been watching that. A couple fighters I know, Mike Tisa and Samson Failure on that show, and they're from Spokane, and I've got to meet them, and really cool kids, and they're doing pretty good on the show, so it's good to see some kids kind of from where I'm from doing pretty good on that, and I have hopes that Dominic Cruz is going to destroy Faber, so that's what I think is going to happen.
All right. Well, we'll see. It's pretty close in the fights. It's actually one of the first seasons where nobody's running away with it right off the bat, I think, in a while, as far as this year. But it's definitely a good crop of kids, too. I mean, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah, a lot of talent.
And it's obviously proven to be a great way to break into the UFC. There's probably like... different dynamic now when you get into the show. It used to just be, the winner, maybe one or two other guys would get to fight in the UFC. Now it seems like five or six or seven even get crossed over and stay there for a little while.
Yeah, for sure.
Their careers there. So it's turned into quite a juggernaut, the show that nobody wanted to put on the air unless the UFC produced it in the beginning. Now everybody wants it.
Yeah.
And everything. But you said you were friends with Mike. He was.
Mike Garcia and Sam Slater. I met both of them, and I got to meet them. Both of them are super nice kids, and hopefully they'll do pretty good on that show.
I'm surprised how late he got picked. Because I watched his first fight to get into the house, and I said this kid's gonna go far in this competition.
Yeah. Definitely some good fights.
Yeah, see what happens there. But what's the scene out there like in Washington? What do you where you go to train a lot, and what's it like as far as the community of MMA out there?
Oh yeah, the community is great over here. I kind of live in a small town in Yakima, Washington, and everybody kind of knows everybody, so super friendly neighborhood. And
so that's our 90-second warning. Is there anybody you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to out there before we go?
Yeah, I want to shout out to all my friends and family over in Yakima, Washington, my mom, both of them, and everybody that just supports TJ and his quest to become the title holder at Cage Sports. So, thank you, everybody.
All right. Good luck, buddy. I don't think you'll need it Saturday, but keep up the good work.
All right, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Bye, folks. We got a minute left, so we got to fade off fast.
Hold on.
And until next week, I guess that's it for us. Thanks for dealing with the technical difficulties and listening in. And we'll have another couple great guests lined up for next week. And see you then. Adios.
All right. That's all I got to say is hasta la vista, baby.
Yeah. Don't forget to check out milifidel.com. MILIFIDEL.com. Thanks a lot. Bye.